Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 31 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth District's Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 31st of July, 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by Dusty, Margaret H., Julie and Stephen. And in the news, the cost of the winter garden restoration is going up. We're losing a beefeater, but gaining a Nando's. And everybody art for the bin men. All this plus Grapevine Extra with some unbridled nostalgia. Once again, we've no birthdays to report, but once again, loads of news. So it's straight over to Dusty, Margaret and Julie with part one.
So hello everybody, it's Dusty and Julie and Margaret this week, and we're glad to be here to read the news to you. And I'll start with the fraudulent possession of tobacco. A man has admitted to the fraudulent possession of 200 kilograms of foreign branded tobacco in Norfolk. But the defendant pleaded guilty to possession of dutiable goods with fraudulent intent before the trial began at King's Lynn Crown Court. Shawn Abu Baker had been charged with possession of the dutiable goods with fraudulent intent on or before December the 20th, 2023 in Great Yarmouth. The 49-year-old was also accused over the possession of criminal property, £36,440, on or before the same date in the town. Abu Baker had been due to go on trial this month, accused of both offences. But the defendant pleaded guilty to possession of dutiable goods with fraudulent intent before the trial began at King's Lynn Crown Court. He's previously denied the money laundering offence, but the plea was deemed acceptable to the Crown. Abu Baker from Derby will now be sentenced on August the 26th after the preparation of a pre-sentence report. A restaurant chain is set to disappear from the town. Beefeater will close all 106 UK restaurants on September the 10th as part of a major reconstructuring by parent company Whitbread. Up to 3,800 jobs are at risk nationwide as Whitbread phases out both its Beefeater and Brewer's Fair brands. It means that the Great Yarmouth branch will soon be disappearing. Dominic Paul, Chief Executive of Whitbread, said, "This has been a rigorous process and we've approached all options with an open mind. Our new five-year plan builds on our strengths and drives a significant acceleration of our strategy. This plan will transform Whitbread into a higher margin, higher returning, pure play hotel business. The closures are part of Whitbread's new five-year growth strategy to refocus the business and reduce costs by £250 million. The company will convert some of the restaurant sites into additional Premier Inn rooms and intends to sell off around £1.5 billion worth of freehold properties to fund further growth. Whitbread currently operates around 86,600 hotel rooms and plans to increase that number to 96,000 by the 2031 financial year. The company said it will try to redeploy affected staff into other roles within the business but expects significant job losses. A spokesman for Whitbread said, "We will do all we can to support those colleagues affected."
More money will be needed for a long-awaited restoration of the landmark Winter Gardens after the discovery of extensive structural damage. Contractors have been working on the 19 million regeneration of the Winter Gardens on Marine Parade since November last year, as the local council prepares to reopen the venue as a modern people's palace. But senior council officials now say that the initial enabling works have shown that large sections of the Grade 2 listed cast iron frame is suffering from more extensive damage than previously expected. Because of the building's listed status, the original ironwork cannot simply be swapped out, meaning specialist conservation work will be needed. The enabling work also uncovered utilities beneath the floor that were in a worse condition than anticipated, but the iron frame is now considered the main challenge. Councillor Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said the findings mean the current funding package is no longer enough. We will be going to ask for additional funding. Work has shown the building is in worse condition than we first anticipated. He said the council is now calculating how much extra money will be required, with approaches planned to government, the National Lottery, Heritage Fund, and the Historic England. Rising construction costs, driven by global pressures, including conflicts in Ukraine and Iran, as well as wider inflation, have added further strain to the project's budget. Despite the setback, Councillor Smith said the council remained committed to delivering the full restoration and still aimed to reopen a fully restored Winter Garden by 2028. The enabling work, supported by the National Lottery Heritage Fund, had given the most detailed picture yet of the building condition since it was relocated to Great Yarmouth in 1904. Much of the iron frame has now been uncovered for the first time in decades, allowing engineers to access corrosion, structural weakness, and the specialist conservation techniques required. The council says the restored building will be a year-round cultural and community venue, forming a centrepiece of the town's regeneration plans and supporting its bid to become the UK's first town of culture. It is also considering the impacts of increasingly rapid climate change and how the building can operate sustainably with complex temperature controls and water management a significant factor. The Winter Gardens closed in 2008 due to safety concerns, and since then the Grade 2 listed Victorian venue has fallen into dereliction and remains on Historic England's Heritage at Risk Register. Workers began the long-awaited regeneration of the building at the end of last year, with hoardings installed around the site. Located next to the Wellington Pier, it is set to become a people's palace with cafes and community spaces when it reopens in 2028. Work at the site will see the restoration of its original features, including cast and wrought iron work and lost details of timber screens, along with new services for the community. The designs also include new glazing, heating and cooling systems, significant planting, rainwater harvesting, irrigation, low energy and decarbonisation. The Winter Gardens is the UK's last surviving Victorian glasshouse on the seaside promenade. The structure was constructed in Torquay and Devon in the late 19th century. However, after the business was unsuccessful, the building was dismantled and transported to Great Yarmouth, where it was rebuilt and opened in 1904. Over the decades, it has been used for roller skating, ballroom dancing, an amusement arcade, a German beer garden, and a variety of other entertainment.
The curtain has risen once again at Pleasurewood Hills after a family favourite attraction has reopened its doors. After years of closure, The park's Castle Theatre reopened earlier this month, with Hosseini's circus dazzling crowds as the first returning act to kick off a summer of entertainment. The circus marks the return of live entertainment to one of the park's most treasured venues following a decade of park management changes and shifting entertainment lineups. Circus Hosseini offers a modern, fast-paced production designed to entertain visitors of all ages. A spokesperson for the show said, "From gravity-defying aerial routines to lightning-fast acrobatics, the show delivers unforgotten moments from start to finish. Guests can expect a vibrant atmosphere filled with colour, music and excitement as talented performers from around the world take to the stage. The reopening of the theatre is a major milestone for the theme park, marking the start of a new chapter for live entertainment there. The revival of the theatre follows a refurbishment announcement in March, when the park reopened under the new owners, Premier Attractions Limited. Circus Hosseini runs until August the 31st, offering the perfect addition to family days out during the school break. Admission to the show is included with park entry. The Castle Theatre first opened in 1988 as the Haunted Castle, a spooky attraction blending live actors, special effects and eerie puppetry. In the 1990s, it was transformed into the Crinkly Bottom TV Studios during Noel Edmonds' takeover of the park, famously featuring Mr. Blobby. During the 2000s, the theatre became home to Captain Andy's Rivertown Review, a Disney-style audio and animatronic show created by former Disney Imagineers. Later in 2012 and 2013, Britain's Got Talent star Sean Alexander brought his Confucianist magic show to the venue.
Our work is underway to fix the swing bridge following a major mechanical fault that has caused delays for boats and rail users. The Reedham Swing Bridge over the River Yare is currently unable to reliably open for river traffic due to a central bearing fault. The 123-year-old structure also carries rail services over the river and normally swings open to allow larger boats to pass. Teams are already on site carrying out preparatory work ahead of replacing the bearing entirely, but due to the works there will be some short-term closures of the rail lines. Train services will not run over the bridge on Saturday, August the 8th, and Sunday, August the 9th, as well as Saturday, August the 29th, and Sunday, August the 30th. During those closures, buses will replace trains between Norwich and Lowestoft, stopping at Oulton Broad North. Some additional services will run from Norwich to Great Yarmouth via Brundle, Buckenham, Cantley and Reedham, but passengers are advised to check for the latest travel information. To accommodate larger boats, engineers and the Broads Authority have scheduled limited bridge openings over the coming week. Joe Kennedy, Infrastructure Director for Network Rail Anglia, said, "We're so sorry for the disruption to boat users, passengers and neighbours caused by the mechanical fault at Reedham Swing Bridge. This will be a major complex repair of a bridge that is both a critical part of infrastructure and an important heritage landmark for the region. We are working flat out to get Reedham back into working order again."
Scott Hussey is Reform UK Norfolk County Councillor Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health. He writes, "Our high streets mirror the state of the country and in parts of Norfolk, as in much of Britain. What they reflect is an economic decline and the growing reach of organised crime. Great Yarmouth, walk through the town centre and you may notice something odd. Shop after shop selling tobacco, cigarettes and vapes, often with more staff than customers, operating largely on cash and surviving despite limited visible trade. These patterns raise questions. Investigations nationally have shown too many such shops are linked to organised crime. The National Crime Agency estimates at least £1 billion of criminal cash is laundered through UK high street businesses every year. As legitimate businesses disappear because of online shopping, out-of-town retail and high taxation, vacant premises and falling rents create opportunities that criminal gangs are quick to exploit. Buying cut-price cigarettes, tobacco, or a bargain vape from a mini-mart, general store, or tobacconist may seem like a victimless crime. It often isn't. These shops are a favourite of criminal networks as a means to generate cash and launder money. It's a vicious circle. Profits are ploughed back into organised crime, including labour exploitation and human trafficking. These shops also undercut legitimate businesses, pose a public health risk and damage confidence in our town centres. Great Yarmouth challenges reflect wider national problems. Decades of underinvestment, sluggish growth, rising crime and the pressures created by the high levels of legal and illegal immigration. The town is a trading standards hotspot in Norfolk. The rapid proliferation in recent years of shops selling tobacco, cigarettes and vapes is a particular concern. Residents naturally ask who owns these businesses, who profits from them, whether those involved have the legal right to work here, and whether organised crime is operating behind the scenes. People are entitled to ask these questions without being accused of prejudice. We have already had considerable success seizing illicit cigarettes and tobacco in recent months, but enforcement must go further than confiscating stock. We need to dismantle the criminal networks behind these operations. This is why Norfolk County Council's Trading Standards team, working with Norfolk Constabulary, Great Yarmouth Borough Council, His Majesty's Revenue and Customs, and other enforcement partners, launched a targeted intelligence-led crackdown. Where we find illegal goods, we will seize them. Where we have the evidence and legal powers, we will close rogue businesses and keep them closed. Where we find repeat offenders, we will pursue the strongest enforcement action available. Above all, we will work to identify and disrupt the organised criminal gangs behind these operations. I won't pretend this is simple. Trading standards teams have been squeezed for more than two decades, even as a problem has grown. Powers to shut rogue shops are often slow and limited, and even a successful case may close a premises for only months, sometimes just days, before it or a new identical operation reopens elsewhere. It is a frustrating game of whack-a-mole. We need stronger powers to close illegal businesses quickly and keep them closed. Government must do more. We are not waiting for Westminster. Norfolk's trading standards offices are getting stuck in right now. This crackdown is about protecting honest businesses from being undercut by criminal operators. It's about protecting children and young people from cheap, illicit products, and it is about giving residents back the town centre they deserve. Towns already struggling can become attractive to money laundering gangs precisely because they are struggling. Tackling illicit trade must go hand in hand with a genuine plan to bring legitimate businesses and shoppers back into the town centre. One without the other will not work. The long-term answer is economic prosperity, thriving town centres and secure borders. This crackdown sends a clear message. Organised crime is no longer going to get an easy ride in Great Yarmouth.
A call for a rethink over the scrapping of a scheme which allowed Norfolk councillors to spend up to £11,000 a year on highway projects has been rejected. The Liberal Democrat and Conservative groups at County Hall had hoped to convince fellow county councillors to put pressure on council leader David Bick to reconsider his decision to axe the highway's local member fund. Mr. Bick, who became County Hall leader after reform success in May's election, had used his powers to pull the plug on the scheme without any discussion by other councillors. The fund had enabled councillors to use the cash for projects such as paying for traffic orders for speed limit reductions, electric vehicle charging points, footpath extensions and grit bins. But Mr. Bick ditched the fund, with the £924,000 previously split among all 84 county councillors, instead reallocated as ring-fenced highway money for general highways maintenance, including fixing potholes. At Tuesday's July the 21st full council meeting, Liberal Democrat group leader Brian Watkins tabled a motion seconded by Conservative group leader Miss Kay Mason Billig, asking for the fund to be reinstated. But Reform councillors defended the decision, saying it was fairer to put the money in a central pot. Reform Cabinet member Nick Taylor said a third of the available pot was unspent last year, and he'd been able to get highways issues addressed simply by talking to County Hall officers. Any hopes the motion movers might have had that they would get the numbers for the council to agree the motion were dashed when John Whedon, leader of the Great Yarmouth Thirst Group, said he agreed with Reform's approach. We fully respect that official decisions have to be made and efficiencies have to be found, he said. The motion was defeated by 36 votes against, with 32 for and 9 abstentions.
A dead whale that could weigh up to £20,000 has been removed using a trailer after washing up on a local beach. The giant mammal is understood to have turned up on the sand at Hemsby near Great Yarmouth sometime on the evening of Thursday the 23rd of July. Dan Goldsmith of the Marine and Wildlife Rescue has identified the creature as a mink whale. The discovery came after several videos of a whale in the sea near the village were posted last week. Great Yarmouth Borough Council urged villagers to avoid the carcass at the time. Now the council has confirmed that the whale has been removed after being loaded onto a trailer on Monday evening following 4 days on the sand. A spokesman for the council said the dead whale, which washed up at Hemsby, was safely removed from the beach after being carefully loaded onto a trailer on Monday evening. The work was carried out by the council's company, GYS, working with the Hemsby lifeboat team. The animal will now be transported for disposal. We'd like to thank the public for keeping their distance while the work was carried out. The whale is one of several which have washed up around the shores of Norfolk over the years. In June 2023, a mink whale washed up at Old Hunstanton Beach, and in December 2019, a dead 30-foot mink whale was found at Eacham.
People had sported their finest outfits for a memorable evening at the races. Women from across the region donned their most glamorous attire for the annual Ladies' Evening at Great Yarmouth Racecourse. The event saw everyone dressed in their best, with many entering the Style Awards for the chance to win £500 in cash before the 90s DJ set and England versus Argentina World Cup semi-final being shown on a big screen. In a Facebook video posted by Great Yarmouth Racecourse, winner Evie, who sported a stylish pink dress, said, "I am feeling great, brilliant. The dress I am wearing is from Asos. My fascinator was a last-minute buy from Martins down Regent Road. I planned the outfit a week ago, a last-minute thing, but it clearly worked out in my favour." Excited spectators watched horses pelting down the racecourse in search of glory. Dozens of people then enjoyed the 90s DJ set put on by Harbour Radio presenter Nev Moore before and during halftime of England's World Cup clash with Argentina.
A major restaurant chain is preparing to open its first outlet in Great Yarmouth. Nando's, the South African restaurant chain, best known for its chicken, has applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council for a new licence. The application appears to confirm rumours, which began in May, that the chain would be operating in the town. The restaurant will open its outlet on Gapton Hall Road, potentially replacing the former Pizza Hut, which closed in October. The new licence application is seeking permission to sell alcohol for consumption both on and off the premises from 11 a.m. to midnight every day. A Great Yarmouth location would become the chicken giant's fourth in Norfolk and only the second outside of Norwich. The Red Lion Street and Riverside locations are currently only joined by one branch in King's Lynn. In May, the restaurant advertised a vacancy for an assistant manager's role at Gapton Hall Road. The new licence application is open for representations until August the 13th.
Drought has been declared in Norfolk after weeks of hot and dry weather. The county is suffering from the flash drought as a result of very low rainfall and high temperatures, the Environment Agency has said. The government agency said seven areas of central, eastern and southern England, around half of the country, have been declared. Helen Wakeman, Director of Water at the Environment Agency and Chair of the National Drought Group, said, "The hot and dry weather means that we are currently using water faster than nature can replenish it. A second consecutive summer drought is an exceptionally serious situation and one that will have long-lasting impacts on our environment, wildlife and the economy. We want everyone to stay safe and hydrated during the hot weather, but every drop we can save is a drop more for nature and agriculture." July is set to be the driest month on record, with England having just 7% of expected rainfall and southern England seeing just 1%. As a result, much of the country is experiencing a flash drought, one which has come on quickly despite a very wet winter. An Anglian water hosepipe ban has been in place since July the 11th in Norfolk, banning people from using hosepipes to water gardens, clean vehicles or fill paddling pools. Although most of our area is with Essex and Suffolk Water, who at present do not have such a ban in place. The announcement was made as the county experiences its fourth heat wave of the summer, with temperatures reaching into the 30s in some places. There were record-breaking heat waves in May and June, and a third earlier this month. Water Minister Emma Hardy added, "Our climate is changing. Droughts are becoming increasingly common and we need to be prepared for this new normal. We're delivering long-term change in the water industry and driving record investments in infrastructure, including 9 new reservoirs. We expect water companies to follow their drought plans They go further and faster to reduce leaks and to ensure supplies are not disrupted, even in the driest of weather.
A student's debut short film has been selected for screening. Logan Clark is in his first year studying visual effects and post-production at The Place, part of East Coast College in Great Yarmouth. His film, Long Distance, will be shown at the Sunrise Film Festival, taking place at the Marina Theatre in Lowestoft. Mr. Clark said, "My film being selected for Sunrise Film Festival was a crazy feeling, and I couldn't believe it when the email came in. I never thought my film would be good enough to be selected for a festival, especially one that is located nearby me, which is well known with people around me." The film, which explores the evolution of a long-distance relationship, was made during Mr. Clark's first year on the course. Phil Berry, course leader at The Place, said, "We are extremely proud to hear of Logan's successful acceptance to the festival. It is a really good short film that captures the essence of distant relationships. Long Distance will screen as part of the East Coast Film screening at the Sunrise Film Festival program on Thursday, August the 20th.
A local teenager has gone straight from sitting GCSEs to being a national finalist in the world of hairdressing. Marley Jarvis from Goulston is among the finalists in the Future Talent category at the 2026 Salon Awards. The 16-year-old, who recently finished his studies at Lyngrove School, has already begun building a future in barbering and is based at the Hair Base in Goulston. Mr. Jarvis said, "It's been an amazing few weeks. I went from revising for my GCSEs and celebrating my prom to becoming a national finalist. I'm really grateful to everyone who supported me, and I can't wait to keep learning and building my career in barbering." The Salon Awards recognise technical excellence and creativity in hair and beauty across the UK. Mr. Jarvis' nomination comes just weeks after finishing his exams and attending his school prom. Throughout his early career, Mr. Jarvis has trained with leading industry professionals, including Keith Owen and Sam Baraskal, and continues to grow his skills at the Hair Base. The awards ceremony will take place in November at London's J.W. Marriott Grosvenor House. The teen's mother, Emma Jarvis, who owns Hairbase and founded the THB Academy, said, "Watching Marley discover his passion has been one of the proudest moments of my life. He's worked incredibly hard, giving up evenings and weekends to learn, practice and improve."
Hemsby Football Club has been forced to leave its home village following a bitter row with the local parish council. Hemsby Football Club has used the council-owned Waters Lane playing field for more than a decade, but the club has now said that it will be playing its home games at new welcoming home venues for the 2026-27 season. The move follows a dispute with Hemsby Parish Council over pitch fees. Relations between the two parties began to fray after a fire tore through the Waters Lane Pavilion in November last year, leaving the club unable to use its home changing rooms, storage and facilities for several months. The council initially invoiced the club for its full £800 rent despite the closure, before reducing the charge to £400. The club has described this as a hard-won concession after extensive negotiations, but the council maintains that the club was never actually charged for the period the pavilion was shut, and that the £400 covered a different, earlier period of hire. The more explosive dispute centres on charges for the club's annual summer tournaments. The club says it was invoiced £1,920 per weekend for events that had historically cost around £180 in total, calling the rise a disproportionate price hike. The council says that the 1,920 figure was issued in error owing to a VAT mistake and was corrected to £800 per weekend. It says the club counter-offered £800 for both tournaments combined, which the council accepted. The club has also alleged that a member of its committee was told by a parish representative to make up an event in order to resubmit a grant application after being told that grants could only be applied for retrospectively. The club says it refused to act on the suggestion, calling it fraudulent. The council says that the advice given was to apply for a grant for a future event. It says the application was ultimately withdrawn because the club could not provide the required accounts or bank statements. The two sides also give conflicting accounts of a meeting held to discuss the row. Club says it was told that the meeting was informal, only to find six councillors present at what is described as a confrontational, fully minuted session. The council says six councillors, the clerk and two club representatives attended, and that it was not minuted because it was not formally arranged parish council meeting. Both parties say that they contacted the Norfolk FA, but for seemingly different reasons. The football club has suggested that the governing body shared its concerns over the fee structure imposed on the grassroots club. But the parish council says its approach to Norfolk FA related to a 2008 football foundation grant that funded an extension to the playing field and pavilion after the club suggested that the council was in breach of the grant's terms and threatened to whistleblow. The council says Norfolk FA confirmed no breach had occurred, while acknowledging that fees now being charged are considerably higher than anticipated under the original grant application. In the last attempt to preserve a presence at the village, Hemsby FC says it offered the council £400 to retain its under-16s and adult team at the ground, but that the offer was summarily rejected. The parish council says that the club's proposal was for two teams playing a maximum of 8 fixtures each, plus continued use of the pavilion and storage, and that the club failed to attend the parish council meeting at which the offer was debated. Hemsby FC says it is grateful for support from parents, volunteers, sponsors and neighbouring parish councils that have offered pitches to keep its teams playing locally. It is expected that the club will now play at least some games at Potterheim, 7 miles away.
Well, much more full-fat news in just a while. Firstly, though, some news in brief from Julie and Margaret.
A car on its roof caused a road heading down to the sea to be blocked. According to an eyewitness, a car overturned on Beach Road in Caister. Police were called by Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service at 7:12 a.m. on Tuesday to report a single vehicle that had rolled. The Fire and Rescue live incident feed says appliances from Great Yarmouth attended a road traffic collision on Beach Road. The scene and vehicle were made safe. The stop message was received at 07:29.
A massive 44-ton load will be transported across Norfolk this weekend. The load, accompanied by a police escort, will travel along from Horning Road West, Hobbiton, to the Strand, Ipswich, and will measure 18.5 metres long. Its route will include the A1151, the A149, the B1152, the A1064, the A47, the A140, the A14, and the A137. As well as local roads, drivers are advised to expect delays and allow extra time for their journeys.
And a pawn shop targeted in a recent burglary has now reopened its doors to customers. Cash Inn, located in Marketgate Shopping Centre in Great Yarmouth, was broken into between 9 p.m. on Tuesday, July the 21st, and just after 5 a.m. on Wednesday, July the 22nd. Entry had been gained over a window being smashed and jewellery was reported stolen. Police were called to the scene at 5:08 a.m. A cordon remained in place during the day and the shop reopened later that afternoon.
A cafe owner is seeking to renew planning permission allowing part of a car park to be used for mobile catering units as the site continues to grapple with coastal erosion. The application submitted by Jan Bowles of Great Yarmouth Borough Council seeks to update permission granted in 2019 for part of the cafe and car park at Beach Road in Winterton. For more than 20 years, the cafe has been battling with erosion. The Dunes Cafe, which once stood on the clifftop above the car park, was demolished in December 2020 after storms left it hanging precariously above the beach. In 2022, it was replaced by the Seal View Cafe, which opened in the car park itself and is set back from the eroding clifftop.
Police are hunting for a wanted man who they believe may have travelled to the Norfolk coast. Stanley Byrne, 20, is sought in connection with offences of strangulation and assault, and may be in Great Yarmouth. Byrne has links to Wellingarden City, North Hertfordshire, Stevenage and Luton. Anyone with information is urged to contact Hearts Police.
A man in his 20s has been left seriously injured after a crash involving a motorbike and a car. The collision happened just before 2 p.m. on Saturday, July the 25th, on New Road and involved a grey Volvo EX30. No details of the motorbike have been provided. The injured motorcyclist was airlifted to Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge and was in a serious condition. Emergency services, including the air ambulance, attended the scene and the road was closed until around 7:30 p.m.
Well, just before the rest of the news, we've got an advert. Here's Stephen.
Dusty is doing it again. She's got another show coming up. Dusty and a whole heap of people inviting you to come and have a seat at the pictures. They're doing a song and dance and comedy show on August the 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Pavilion. Tickets are £12 and can be bought from the Pavilion on 01493 662832 or galstonpavilion.co.uk. I hope everybody will like to go along to see Dusty doing her magic again and keep getting all these people together.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
three Norfolk holiday parks have been named among the best in the UK. Park Dean Resorts, California Cliffs, Cherry Tree in Great Yarmouth, and Manor Park in Hunstanton have each earned a spot in the TripAdvisor Travel's Choice Awards for 2026. The awards are based on 12 months of first-hand customer feedback and honour select accommodations and attractions. The three Norfolk sites are among a total of 25 out of 65 Park Dean Resorts properties to receive the award this year. Steve Richards, Chief Executive at Park Dean Resorts, said, "Feedback from our customers is hugely important to us, and we're incredibly proud that 25 of our parks have been recognised with a TripAdvisor Traveller's Choice Award. Coupled with our overall TripAdvisor score of 4.35 from more than 14,000 reviews, this achievement is a true testament to the hard work of our teams put in every day, helping guests create amazing memories with their families and loved ones."
A huge fire blaze in a local woodland saw seven crews fight flames all throughout the night. Fire started in Fritton Wood in New Road, Fritton, at 4:49 p.m. on Thursday, July the 23rd. Firefighters battled with the blaze for almost an entire day as four crews remained at the scene, dampening down and tackling hotspots through Friday afternoon. A video from the scene showed smoke pouring from the woods. It comes as the county braces for yet another heat wave, and in Mercury set to hit 30 degrees in places. The UK Health Security Agency has issued a yellow heat health warning for Norfolk. In the first 16 days of July alone, Norfolk Fire and Rescue Services attended more than 200 fires in the open. A spokeswoman for the NFRS, that's the Fire Rescue Service, "As high temperatures continue and the ground is dry, we'd like to remind people of the importance of disposing of rubbish in bins or taking it home with them, not using disposable barbecues or campfires, and fully extinguishing all smoking materials. If you do see a fire in the open, call 999 immediately." Seven crews from Great Yarmouth, Alston, North Waltham, Wroxham, Acle, Hingham, Loddon, the water carrier from Heatherset, specialist wildfire vehicles, the control unit from Windham, and fire officers were all at the woodland at the height of the fire.
Families in Norfolk can save money with free bus travel for children this summer. The scheme, part of the government's Great British Summer Savings Initiative, means that children aged 5 to 15 will be able to travel without charge on many bus routes throughout August. Five major operators are participating in the scheme: First Bus, Sanders, Stagecoach, Border Bus and Central Connect. It's designed to support families during the school holidays while promoting the use of public transport. Tom Dickerson, Norfolk County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways and Transport, said, "I'm thrilled that so many of our operators are taking part in this scheme. Providing free travel for all 5 to 15-year-olds will not only give our younger residents more freedom to get around this summer, but also reduces the costs for families who want to get out and about and enjoy what our beautiful county has to offer. Children under 5 travel for free on all bus services across Norfolk."
A carer who was found guilty of 2 sexual assaults against a woman in her own home has been jailed. Christopher McConville had been charged with 2 counts of sexual assault against one woman in her home in Norfolk between May 2017 and August 2019. The 59-year-old was sentenced to 20 months imprisonment after he was convicted of both offences against the woman, who cannot be identified for legal reasons, in February, following a three-week trial. The Conville of Prince of Wales Road in Caister, near Great Yarmouth, was sentenced by Judge Catherine Moore at Norfolk Crown Court on Tuesday, July the 28th. The verdicts came after jurors returned a majority verdict following more than 14 hours of deliberations. McConville had also been accused of a further sexual assault against another woman, who has since died on March the 2nd, 2017. The defendant was found not guilty of that offence after the trial. He was put on the sex offenders register for 10 years.
Heating oil containers have been found dumped on land in Galston. Great Yarmouth Borough Council, GYBC, is appealing for information after plastic heating oil containers were discovered fly-tipped in the town. A Facebook post from GYBC said, "We've recently had three separate reports of heating oil containers being found dumped on the track that runs between Common Road allotments and Broadland Close, Galston. If you have any information to help with our inquiries, please get in touch. If you have any information which could help the council, you can call 01493 846 478. That's 846 478.
A man has denied the rape of one girl and sexual assault of another on a Norfolk beach. Madeleine Elenka has been charged with one count of rape, one count of sexual assault, and one offence of sexual assault by penetration. It comes after two teenage girls reported that they'd been raped in Great Yarmouth's South Beach on May the 16th. The 34-year-old Romanian national of Suffolk Place, Yarmouth, appeared at Norwich Crown Court for a plea and trial preparation hearing on Tuesday, July the 28th. Elenka denied the rape and sexual assault of one girl and an offence of assault by penetration against another, neither of whom can be identified for legal reasons. Judge Catherine Moore fixed a trial date for December the 7th this year. Elenka, who wore a white T-shirt and spoke through an interpreter during the hearing, was represented by Stephen Spence, while Ed Renvoys appeared for the prosecution. The case was adjourned until August the 25th. A second defendant, David Viak, appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court, also charged in relation to the incident. The 35-year-old Polish national of Dover Court in Caister entered no pleas to allegations of rape, oral rape, assault by penetration and sexual assault. His case was sent to Norwich Crown Court for the preliminary hearing on October the 25th. He was released on bail with conditions not to contact the alleged victims, not to enter premises licensed to sell alcohol, and not to leave the UK or apply for any new international travel documents, having previously surrendered his passport.
Plans to build a new bungalow on agricultural land in Flegborough have been refused amid a raft of public objections. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council have rejected a proposal to construct a detached private bungalow on the land. The plans, submitted by Mr. Richard Coleman, would have seen the creation of a bungalow with a garage and driveway on land to the east of Marsh Road and south of the Rye Gardens development. The proposed development, which is bordered to the north by four two-storey detached homes, would have seen the construction of three bedrooms with an open-plan kitchen and living area. Mr. Coleman, the long-standing owner of the land and a retired farmer, has historically managed the site as part of a wider agricultural holding and said that the site was no longer economically viable for agriculture. He wanted to build his retirement home after being unable to find an ideal property within the village. His plans have been thwarted, however, after more than 20 members of the public raised objections to the proposal. 24 people wrote letters objecting to the plans, citing concerns about the potential loss of agricultural land, access issues and effect on ecology. Some people were also concerned about the proposed home potentially spoiling views over the fields and deeming it to be an inappropriate intrusion into the countryside. Flegborough Parish Council objected to the plans, saying that it conflicted with their neighbourhood plan and that the proposed build would fall outside the development limits. Anglian Water also raised an objection, saying the application did not provide details about how surface water would be discharged. Planners at the council said that there were a number of issues with the scheme and that the proposal would lead to an unjustified loss of agricultural land. They also said that the proposal intrudes into the countryside, is not reflective of the surrounding character of the area and is considered to be a poor design. As a result, they concluded that the plans were wholly considered unacceptable and recommended them for refusal.
A man accused of killing a 39-year-old man while driving his Tesla dangerously along Great Yarmouth seafront has appeared in court. Zach Garrido, 25, has been charged with causing death by dangerous driving after a Tesla Model 3 struck Paul Levy on South Beach Parade on August the 27th, 2024. Mr. Levy, a father of two, died at the scene following the crash on the Golden Mile at around 9:45 p.m. Appearing at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court, Garrido was not asked to enter a plea. Following the incident, the road was closed until 2:40 a.m. the following morning. A man in his 20s was arrested on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving, and police bailed him until November the 8th, 2024. They extended his bail until February 16th, 2025, and then the force confirmed it was extended again until May 25th, 2025. An inquest into the death of Mr. Levy was opened at Norwich Coroner's Court in September 2024 and was told he had died of multiple injuries. Garrido of Mill Road in Borough Castle will next appear at Norwich Crown Court on August the 31st this year. He has been granted unconditional bail.
Street cleaning and waste collection across Great Yarmouth will come to a halt next month after unions confirmed strike dates in a dispute over pay. Around 100 workers employed by Great Yarmouth services, including bin collectors, street cleaners, landscaping staff and grave diggers, will take strike action on August the 6th, 7th, 10th, 11th and 12th, with unions warning that industrial action will escalate if no agreement is reached. Unite, which represents the majority of staff involved, says workers are paid only pennies above the minimum wage and claim equivalent roles in Norwich, Broadland and Lowestoft receive around 20% more. Unite General Secretary Sharon Graham said these workers are doing heavy, smelly work in all weathers to keep Great Yarmouth clean and tidy. Their current rate of pay is an insult and needs to improve. The walkout is expected to cause widespread disruption. Waste collections for businesses along the seafront will stop. Litter bins will go unemptied, and beach and street cleaning will not take place. Household waste collections will also be suspended. Unite Regional Officer Andreas Kuchner said the council needed to address what he called deeply unfair poverty pay rates. It seems the council's leadership would rather let residents, businesses and tourists suffer a summer of rubbish than address the deeply unfair poverty pay rates these essential workers are expected to survive on. The only ones thanking the council for causing these strikes will be the seagulls and the rats. Strike action can still be avoided, but that will require an acceptable offer. The dispute also involves members of Unison and the GMB. Great Yarmouth Services is a wholly owned subsidiary of Great Yarmouth Borough Council. A spokesman for GYS said, Great Yarmouth Services is extremely disappointed Unite is pursuing strike action that has been targeted to cause a disruption for residents, tourists and businesses in the vital summer holiday period. The company has drawn up contingency plans to maintain core services that prioritise need and public health. GYS resources will be focused on refuse collection, emptying litter bins and keeping the streets clean in key locations, as well as grave digging services during the week-long strike. Norfolk County Council has also agreed to extend its operating hours at the Caister transfer station so waste can be delivered over a long period to try to maintain daily collections. At the heart of the disagreement is Great Yarmouth Unite's demand for an unaffordable 20% pay rise for all staff, something completely out of line with the union's national pay demands. Pay talks happen at a national level, and increases cannot be locally negotiated. When GYS Limited was set up, it was agreed with unions that pay would match the National Joint Council Award. This is a national system that decides increases for workers in similar roles across the country. Agreeing to a 20% pay rise would cost about £1 million a year and would lead to reduced services for residents to pay for the increase. GYS is committed to offering staff fair pay and conditions for carrying out their important work and has already introduced a wide range of improvements and enhancements for employees. However, as a responsible employer and custodian of public funds, the company must balance pay demands with protecting local jobs and delivering quality and cost-effective services for residents.
They were the story of last summer, but Norfolk's flag wars may be flaring up again. Police were called to the streets of Caister, and tensions between locals who have hung national flags to street lamps and a group of masked men apparently intent on taking them down. The group was seen walking through the village on Monday night with a large stick, apparently for removing banners which have been put up around the area, including in Yarmouth Road and the High Street. In video footage of the incident, they are challenged by an angry local who says he lives in the street with his children. The man follows one of the masked individuals down the street and shouts at him, "What kind of behaviour is this?" The man, who is recording the video, then asks why the man is walking on the street late at night with a large stick. "You are walking around with sticks and masks," the local shouts, before telling them to leave the village. An image of a police car at the scene is showing at the end of the footage. The scenes are reminiscent of those which played out several weeks last summer as Operation Raise the Colours swept the county. This grassroots campaign saw Union Jacks and St George's Crosses put up on lampposts and street furniture in communities across Norfolk. While they were welcomed by many people as symbols of national pride and unity, others claimed the activity was antagonistic and designed to imitate and tried to intimidate and tried to take them down or stop them being flown. This led to repeated clashes in Norwich and other areas. A spokeswoman for Norfolk Police said officers were called on Monday morning following reports of a number of males who were seen wearing balaclavas and carrying weapons. Officers found the group were carrying poles, which were not being used as weapons. The police spokeswoman said no offences were identified and no further action was taken. John Whedon, Great Yarmouth First District Councillor for Caister South, which covers Yarmouth Road, said flags being on lampposts are not hurting anyone and give a great sense of patriotism to the community. Great Yarmouth MP Rupert Lowe has been a staunch supporter of the flag movement. Last year, he took aim at protesters who took down 46 flags who had put along Gorston seafront. Mr. Lowe said, "Tearing down our national flags is a disgrace. My official response as MP, if you hate our flag enough to rip it down, why don't you sod off and live somewhere else? Great Yarmouth is proudly patriotic, the most patriotic corner of England. We should fly our flags with pride."
Hopton and Bradwell warned over cold callers. People are being warned to stay vigilant after reports of doorstep cold callers. The calls have been reported in the Hopton and Bradwell areas of Great Yarmouth, with the individuals attempting to engage with locals about their broadband speed. Norfolk County Council Trading Standards is urging people not to engage with the callers, who may use persuasive tactics to gather personal information or make claims of special offers. Our advice is never to deal with doorstep cold callers, which includes never allowing a cold caller access to your property and never agreeing to further visits from them or other people, a spokesman of Norfolk County Council said. Similar warnings were issued this month in Diss and Potter Heigham after reports of cold callers offering home improvement services. A man had been stopping at properties in Potter Heigham claiming he can see issues and offering to undertake repairs. Anyone citing cold callers in Norfolk, please contact us through our partners in the Citizens Advice Consumer Helpline or Norfolk County Police, the spokesman added.
A district councillor is set to stand trial, accused of assaulting a woman and possession of a long-bladed article in a public place. Justin Rundle, 49, denied three charges at Norwich Magistrates Court, linked to allegations in the ward he politically represents. The independent councillor on Great Yarmouth Borough Council had failed to show up for a previous court hearing to answer the allegations. He subsequently spent a night being held in police cells after handing himself in when a warrant was issued for his arrest. Rundle of West Road, Ormsby, pleaded not guilty to common assault, possession of a knife or bladed article in a public place, and resisting arrest. The charges relate to an incident in Caister-on-Sea on June the 22nd, when a woman is said to have been assaulted. Rundle is alleged to have resisted a police officer and been found with a multi-tool with sharp blades when he was arrested near his home address the following day. He elected for his case to be heard at Norwich Magistrates Court, with a trial set to take place on March the 3rd. The district councillor pleaded guilty to a Bail Act offence over his failure to attend the previous hearing on July the 22nd, without a reasonable excuse. His defence solicitor, James Harding, told the court Rundle, who was accompanied to court by his mother, had failed to write down the correct date for the hearing. District Judge Matthew Bone fined him £100 and told him he had to pay a £40 victim surcharge. He said, "I've taken into account that this was an error rather than a willful disregard for the court. I also take into account that he was subsequently arrested on a warrant and spent a night in the cells." Rundle, who previously also served on Ormsby St Margaret with Scratby Parish Council, has missed council meetings following his arrest. A Great Yarmouth Borough Council spokesman previously said, "The authority is aware that one of its elected members has been charged with a number of offences. Given legal proceedings are ongoing, it would not be appropriate for the council to comment further at this time."
And this one is my final one for the news today. We've had an enormous amount of news to read, and I must apologise for my voice. The heat has got me, and I have struggled a bit this week, so if it's a little bit rough, I do apologise. However, paddleboarding suspended. Wild swimming and paddleboarding have been paused at a private part of the Norfolk Broads due to water quality concerns. The activities held at Fairhaven Woodland and Water Garden in South Walsham have been suspended due to high algae levels in the water. The site features a private section of the water at the heart of the Broads, which hosts boat trips and water activities. Staff have confirmed the next sessions planned for Wednesday night and Saturday will not go ahead. Although recent water quality results show that some improvement from the last test, the levels still do not meet safety standards and therefore paddleboarding and swimming cannot resume. A spokesman for Fairhaven Woodland and Water Garden said, "We know this will be disappointing news and we really appreciate your continued patience and understanding while we continue to monitor the water quality closely. The next round of water quality testing is scheduled for the week beginning August the 3rd. A locally based beautician is heading to Fashion Week after starting a career in modelling. Galston mother of two, Lily Rose Spellman, launched Lily's Beauty Cabin in 2022, which offers services in nails, lashes and brows. Mrs. Spellman has been involved in the modelling industry since childhood, though she only started pursuing a career professionally this year. Starting as a makeup model, she gained her recognition through her social media platforms and is now expanding into editorial and fashion modelling. This September, she will be heading to London Fashion Week after being invited by the singer Pierre Garoudy. "It has always been a dream of mine to go to Fashion Week. So this is a real pinch me moment," Mrs. Spellman said. "This is massive for me in my first year of modelling." While building up her modelling portfolio, she's still committed to her beauty business, which placed her 17th in the top 100 for UK Nail Technician of the Year 2025. "My business is based in Norfolk and I never want that to change," she added.
Britannia Pier on Great Yarmouth Marine Parade has been granted planning permission to build an external raised decking area and change the use of land north of the Pier Tavern to use as a new beer garden. It is the latest stage in the massive transformation taking place on the pier that has already seen its owners open a new indoor entertainment centre and sports bar. The proposed decking would extend straight from the Pier Tavern and run alongside most of the width of the bar. The plans were approved by Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Development Management Committee. Last year, Britannia Pier officially opened its new indoor entertainment centre and trebled the size of the arcade. an 8 metre wide and 3 metre high digital advertising screen was also installed at the front of the pier to help illuminate the building at night. The owners also added new rides at the end of the pier theme park and installed more traditional lighting along the deck. The venue opened its new look pier tavern in April. It was the latest stage to be completed in the owner's grand project for the pier, which began in November 2024. The pier was named the National Pier Society Pier of the Year 2026. Since acquiring the pier in December 2022, the current owners, Triangle Amusements Limited, have added new rides to the theme park at the end of the pier, revamped the arcades, and installed traditional lighting along the deck.
Welcome to this week's edition of Grapevine Extra, with Julie starting off proceedings, but Dusty, Margaret and Stephen soon joining in.
I've been looking at things which I thought would be appropriate for this week, and I've got three little pieces here which I think will resonate with an awful lot of folk. And this is a poem about life as it was. It starts off, "We met and married a long time ago. We worked long hours when wages were low. No telly, no bath, for times were hard. Just a cold water tap and a walk in the yard. No holidays abroad, no carpets, no floors. We'd coal on the fire and did lock doors. Our children arrived, no pill in those days. We brought them up without any state aid. They were safe going out to play in the park, and old folk could go for a walk in the dark. No Valium drugs or no LSD. We cured most of our ills with a good cup of tea. No vandals, no muggings, not much to rob, actually. We felt we were rich with a couple of bob. Mm. People seemed happier in those far-off days. Kind, caring in so many ways. Milkmen and paper boys would whistle and sing. A night at the pictures was quite a mad thing. We got our share of troubles and strife. We had to face it, the pattern of life."
That's lovely, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, well, that. We compare that now with modern day. And this is a senior version of Facebook. Now, I don't do Facebook, and none of us in this room do Facebook. You probably do, Stephen, but we don't. But as I understand it, people do really weird things. They photograph things that they're having for their lunch and post on it,
yes,
don't they?
Yeah.
So this is a senior version of Facebook. "For all those in my generation who do not and cannot comprehend why Facebook exists, I am trying to make friends outside of Facebook while applying the same principles. Therefore, every day I walk down the street and tell passers-by what I have eaten, how I feel at the moment, what I have done the night before, what I will do later, and with whom. I give them pictures of my family, my dog, and of me gardening, taking things apart in the garage, watering the lawn, standing in front of landmarks, driving around town, having lunch, and doing what anybody and everybody does every day. I also listen to their conversations, give them thumbs up, and tell them I like them. And it works just like Facebook. I already have 4 people following me, 2 police officers, 2 private investigators, and a psychiatrist."
I like it.
That's good.
Yes, that is very good.
And this is the last one. This is, once upon a time when window was just a square hole in a room and application was something written on a paper, when keyboard was a piano and mouse just an animal, when file was an important official material and hard drive just an uncountable road trip, when cut was done with knife and paste with glue, when web was a spider's home and virus was flu, when apple and blackberry were just fruits, that's when we had a lot of time for friends.
Oh yes, true, isn't it? We've lost an awful lot, you know. But I do wonder whether it's really true that people were happy in those hard times.
People have got more now.
Yes.
You've got more things.
Yes.
Everybody's got a... Most people... 99% of them have a warm home. They have a...
Yes.
They have a television. They have a... Things. They have so many more things. But are they happier now than they were?
I'm not sure. No.
Or is it they expect more now, and therefore when they don't have some minor thing, they think it's a big calamity. Yeah.
Yes. But everybody expects to have everything instantly, don't they?
Yes. Mm. None of this wait until you can afford it.
No. Mm.
Save up for something. Oh, God, help you having to save up for something. Yeah. But pay for it on the Never Never. No problem at all.
Exactly. That's right.
And you see, saving up for it gives you an incentive to look after it, doesn't it?
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Today it's a throwaway age, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Everything, oh, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Right. Now, so, Dusty has another bit of...
something
from the paper for you?
Yes. Well, our friend who goes harking back, Emma Brennan, who is a reporter, she brings up all sorts of different subjects every week in the Eastern Daily Press, and I always read them with great interest because I remember so many of the things. And here she is actually remembering trips to the local chippy, remembering the days when fish and chips were served in newspaper and always cooked in beef dripping. And she went away to Australia for a while, and then when she came back, she was sort of comparing and waiting for our fish and chips, and she says that eating fish and chips in Australia on the beach without sustaining severe sunburn was quite difficult.
Yeah, must have been.
And she said, yes, they did still fish and chips in Australia, but the fish was snapper, and the chips were mostly frozen versions cooked in oil with a flavour she didn't like. So, one of the first things she did upon her return home, despite it being a freezing cold January, was to go to the seaside and celebrate with a parcel of crispy battered cod, chunky, randomly shaped golden chips, with a liberal shaking of salt. She said, I forewent the optional extra vinegar and chose to cast aside the wooden chip fork, which Julie will agree with, provided, instead using my fingers, as I would have done in my youth. She said, not that fish and chips haven't changed over the years, because from the way they are packaged and the oils in which they are cooked, also gone are the days when it made for a cheap tea, with the price skyrocketing along so many of life's affordable treats. So, and that led me to think, yeah, fish and chips wrapped in the old newspapers.
Mm.
Now,
right.
I want you to test your minds and see what newspapers we have today, and can you recall some that we had before, the old ones? I will start with the newspapers, the Mail on Sunday, or the Mail.
Yep.
Now, you said, did you not, that you just changed yours to the Express?
I just changed my... Yes.
Can you tell us why?
Changed my mail to the Express. Well, it had changed so much. And I just didn't like the tone of some of them. The things that they were saying about people and the general fact that it just wasn't as well-mannered as it used to be.
Mm.
And eventually I thought to myself, why am I sitting here reading this? I'll change it to something else and see if it's better.
Yeah.
Mm.
What, taking a different angle on the same news?
Well, yes, I suppose so. I changed to the Express, from the Mail to the Express, which is a bit better, I have to say.
Mm.
But, I mean, the Express was always our paper. I mean, from when I was a little girl growing up, which is many years ago now, I remember the Express and what it was like then and what it was like now, and I think it was better then, I have to say. Yeah. Mm.
Well, there's not many real reporters left.
No.
It must be very sad.
And gone are the days when they'd go around with notebooks and pencils scribbling things down.
Yes.
And they used to rush to the telephone box, didn't they? Yes. To be the first to phone in whenever it was.
Yes.
What else you got, Dust?
Well, similarly modern ones. We've got the telegraph, of course, the upper echelons, the Times.
Barely survived.
yes.
The Times and Sunday Times and the Observer, the Guardian.
They were all broadsheets, weren't they?
Yes, they were all broadsheets.
So was the Mercury, you know.
Oh, yes.
If you read one of those on the tube, you had to read it with the person next door, didn't you?
Yes.
What did you say, Stephen?
Well, the Mercury changed in the early 90s, I think. Because it was I'm pretty certain it was a broadsheet when we first came here in the 90s, and then soon after it changed to a tabloid. Right.
To a tabloid, yes. Yeah. Yes.
That was even much harder to read in bed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Then, of course, we had the Gazette. Have we got anything to do with the Gazette anymore?
The Gazette?
No. I don't think it was never a national, was it?
I don't know. And then, of course, there was the wonderful, wonderful News of the World. I know it as well.
Yes.
Everybody looked forward to their Sunday News of the World.
They did.
See, everything's like the News of the World now.
Yes.
Every news.
Well, yes. I mean, what they used to publish in the News of the World.
Yes.
I mean, it's like a Vicarage Tea Party by comparison with what they publish now, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I well remember we went to visit some relatives who we hadn't seen for a lot of years. And we were all going to see these relatives and one thing and another. And my mother was absolutely appalled when she discovered that they took the News of the World. It was a long time before we went back. I just thought it was funny. Yeah.
That would be one of the definites for wrapping up the fish and chips.
Oh, definitely. Yes, it would. Yes.
And then, of course, we get to the small sleazy end, which are still with us, aren't they?
The Sun,
the Sunday Sport. And there's another one, which I cannot remember.
Well, you had the Star.
That's the one?
The Star was the most left-wing of the papers.
That's right.
Then you had... as you say, then you had the Mirror being slightly centre of left wing.
Yes.
And the Sun fairly right wing. Yes.
Well, what we liked about the Mirror, Julie came up with Jane, and then the Handy Andy, didn't we like that?
Oh, yes, but, yes.
But then my favourite was the Daily Sketch.
Mm.
And that was got Dagwood in.
Dagwood,
and he was always getting in trouble with his wife, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yes.
And then the older ones, we had the Reveille, the Titbits.
Yes.
The Daily Chronicle.
Mm.
The Post was lovely. Mm. That got lots of pictures in, didn't it?
Yes, it had. Yes. Yeah.
The Sunday Post, Herald. That's a Scottish paper. Yeah.
The Herald.
The
Herald. Yeah.
Herald. Yeah. Yeah.
The Echo. The Citizen.
Mm.
What else can we think of? As I said, Jane.
You said Chronicle?
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's right, the Chronicle.
Yeah. Which was the one that Andy Capp used to be in?
That was the Daily Mirror.
Yes. Was it the Mirror? Yes.
Oh, yes.
Because he's a working one, isn't he?
Yes, that's right, yes.
So the Mirror, yes.
Yes.
But the one I can boast about, the one I loved so much, was the Children's Newspaper. And that was edited by Arthur Mee. And it was so interesting. It was lovely. I used to look forward to that every week, the Children's Newspaper.
So yes, even after the war, they published that for a while.
Mm.
Because, I mean, I remember having... We didn't actually take it, but I think somebody near us did, and they published, when the children had finished with it, they passed it on to me. Yeah. Mm.
Of course, we've got the Mercury and the Journal, haven't we, and the local newspapers. Then we used to have the Evening Standard, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
We used to get some quite interesting stuff in there. The Evening Standard and, was it a Morning Post or something?
I think there was
a Morning Post. Morning Post was a Scottish paper, yes.
That's right. Yeah. Scottish one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then from the sublime to the ridiculous, there was the advertiser, wasn't there?
Of course.
Oh, yes.
The freebie that used to come in every
door, yes.
Yes, that's right.
Well, it had some stories in it.
Yes. You? well, yes. I mean, I was told that some people stopped the mercury on account of the fact that they were storing. They did, didn't they?
So they didn't need to pay for it.
Yes.
You wouldn't call exchange and marked paper, would you?
Well, it was... No, I don't suppose, because it's... But it was certainly... I'm
just thinking. I remember that. Off I remember,
yes. Yeah, and the free yellow paper. What was that? That had the adverts in. The sort of the exchange of mark got killed off by those free advert papers, didn't
they? Yeah, they did.
That's right. Where you had the free ads. Free ads. That's what it called. Yes, it was just called that. Literally free ads.
Free ads. Mm.
Then there's the Financial Times, wasn't
there? Oh my goodness! Yes.
I couldn't cope with that.
No, you'd only get
read
that
by the people who own the country.
That's right.
You only get your chips wrapped.
Yes,
if you went to South
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. So I think it's also interesting to recall the old days of pictures and of papers and things. And I have to admit that whenever I go into the vegetable shop or something and they wrap up the vegetables in old papers, I always smooth them out and read and see what they
get. They're more interesting like that, aren't they? Yeah. Yes, absolutely, yes. Yes, right. And of course the boys, they were always boys, used to come round doing the deliveries, didn't they?
Yes.
Riding around on their little bikes and things.
Right.
Yes.
But the poor lads now and lasses, with all those inserts that they
Even 20 years ago when we stopped, when we left, because we ran the news agents for 20 years.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Oh, right.
And the Sunday papers that they were getting... We actually had to pay lads to come in half an hour early to just stuff all this stuff into the papers because you had three supplements and two magazines in the Sunday Times or something.
And heaven help you if you put the wrong supplement in the wrong paper.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And even all Sunday papers had a magazine in them.
They did, didn't they?
Even the News of the World had a magazine in it. Mm. So everyone had to be put in. And
Yes.
Half an hour early they came in to do that.
Yeah. Thinking there was another paper. I don't think we mentioned the People, did we?
No, that was the Sunday People.
That was the Sunday People, yes.
That's right, yeah. That was quite interesting, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the papers are much thinner now because the advertising disappeared for them. As I say, I think in the late early 2000s, some of the papers were half an inch thick, it seems.
Yes. Mm.
But now they're down to... You pick up a Telegraph now or something and it's very barely nothing there, 20 pages.
Yes.
Not 150, then.
Mm.
But
just a sort of one more question I'm going to ask you. Going back to the old fish and chips, you know, this is what our friend says here. She says, my mum recalls fish and chips when she was growing up in the 1940s. She said, when we went to see our Nana on a Saturday night, we would go up to the chippy and get chips for the kids. Then we'd sit and eat them at her house. And it was a treat that we really looked forward to.
Mm-hmm.
The chip shop was owned by a grumpy old man we called Mr. Fishy. And I was a bit afraid of him. But we were brave enough to ask him for scraps. Now, the scraps being the small, crispy pieces of batter left in the fryer after the fish. What did you call them? Did you call them scraps, or did you call them anything else?
We used to call them scraps.
They're scraps, yeah.
Mm. Ah, well, my old other half, bless her, she always used to go and ask for scruncheons.
Scruncheons?
What are you talking about, scruncheons? Apparently it's because she's Welsh.
Of course, yes, of course.
So I reckon that, like the scores and the rows that they call different things in
Yes.
That was it. So next time, if you ask for scruncheons, see what the anyway, that's my contribution today.
Lovely.
Thank you very much, Lise.
Right.
There's Ted's with drainpipe trousers and Deb's in coffee houses, and things ain't what they used to be.
There used to be trains, not very quick, got you from place to place, but now there's just jams, half a mile thick. Stay in the human race, I'm walking, they've stuck parking meters outside our doors to greet us. Now things ain't what they used to be. Oh, monkeys flying round the moon, we'll be up there with them soon. Things ain't what they used to be. Once our beer was frothy, but now it's frothy coffee. Well, things ain't what they used to be. It used to be fun, Dad and old mum paddling around our bend, but now it ain't fun. Never mind, chum, Paris is where we spend our outings. Grandma tries to shock us all doing these up rock and roll things. We used to have stars, singers who sung, a Dixie Melody, they're buying guitars, blinkety-plonk, dagging themselves with free chords only once. We dance from 12 to 3, I've got news for Elvis P.
Things ain't what they used to, it's the lot we used to.
That's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Andy and Margaret C. So, we hope that you'll join us then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, here's hoping that you stay safe and well, and from all your friends at Grapevine, enjoy some more summer, and it's bye for now.